Okay, great. I'm going to call the Recycling Oversight Committee meeting to order. It's 5:05. So I'll do the roll call. Nana Jo.
President.
Mayor Steve Noble is absent. Penny Coleman.
Present.
Jonathan Kaplan is absent. Sunali Sikand is absent. Poppy Cannon Reese, here. Claudia Joseph.
Present.
And Vincent Mao.
Right here.
Present. Did I say that right, Mao or Mo?
Mao.
Okay, great. All right. And Supervisor, you don't have to call me Supervisor, but Aaron and Alan is present. So our first item is the approval of the November 12th, 2025 meeting minutes. It sounds like we had an amendment that we wanted to make.
Yeah, just that where it says Vincent Mao raised a point about roll-off container companies. Vincent Mao asked if roll-offs were subject to flow control, and the answer was no.
I have a question about that.
Okay, hold on just a second.
Yeah.
Okay, yes. What was your question?
My question is, right now, as I understand it, there may not be flow control. In other words, they can take C&D wherever they want. But when they don't take it out of the county, it ends up being MSW? It goes in with MSW and gets shipped to Seneca Meadows?
It doesn't become MSW. It gets combined with MSW and sent to Seneca Meadows. Seneca Meadows is a MSW and C&D permitted landfill. So we have a combined permit at the agency.
Okay.
So we don't separate. But just, well, I was not here at the last meeting.
Yeah.
So I can't answer questions
right from
the questions at the last meeting for your last meeting committee.
Yeah, so like if we can close out this item by making an amendment to the printed minutes.
Are you saying no fair?
I'm just saying.
And then if we want to discuss that further, it'll be a part of this meeting's minutes. So I'll make a motion that we accept the minutes as presented with the amendment. With the
second.
That's good.
Second.
All in favor?
Third.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Abstain? Motion carries. Okay. So another just a couple of business items is Liz asked if we could do our best when we're speaking to please say your name before you speak because it's helpful for her when she's doing the minutes. So that'll be a habit that's a little hard for us to get into, but when we're in a conversation, if you could just try to remember as much as you can to say your name ahead so that she can capture that in the minutes. The second thing, and I didn't put this on the agenda, but I wanted to make sure in our future agendas that I have a correspondence received that I can share with the committee, because there are correspondences that we get copied on from time to time. Some of those will end up being official committee business, and some of them are communications directed to the committee. I did receive outreach from the Kingston. An organization that wrote basically a
Kingston
Citizens. They wrote a request to have a different committees, agencies, organizations take action in making a request regarding the Ulster County Legislature and the UCRA Board. I can circulate this letter. I have a few copies for you. I did respond saying that our committee is not an advocacy group, so what they were specifically asking for us to do in this correspondence is not something that we as a committee can do, because we have a statutory function. Now, we can comment on certain things, but doing something like this is not within the scope of what we do. But I do think it's helpful for us to know what's going on. And then also I received a response from Mark, which I'm happy to let you talk a little bit about that, because I think it pertains a bit to what we're going to be talking about today. That Mark wrote a response on behalf of the UCRA to that correspondence, which was also sent to the UCRA. So that might, I just wanted to let you know that I received this correspondence. I'm going to set up, I wanted, my other business item that I wanted to ask is I wanted to set up like a Google folder or something like that that I could share documents in. Mm-hmm. Does that work for everyone if I just use Google? Okay. I'll put PDFs in there so anyone that doesn't have a Gmail account should still be able to view them. But I could put this in there and any other relevant correspondence that we've received, and I'll keep it organized, any backup that we have as well.
I just need to change my email address to my Gmail account, and I can probably do that with Elizabeth.
Uh-huh, sure.
I'll do that.
Okay, so I just have a couple copies. I did not make copies for everyone because usually I've noticed those things get thrown away. But if anyone wants to look at those.
Is there going to be opportunity to discuss this at the end under new business or
the you mean like the request that was put out?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the request was for us to make, to send a correspondence, basically. And I guess what my take is, as a committee, that's not within the scope of.
I don't think that's the main purpose of communicating to the ROC.
Okay.
So, you know, I would like to speak to it briefly under new business or however you would like to handle it, but I do think it does relate to the mission, and I'd like to be able to make that connection.
Okay. I mean, the letter I received is requesting that the legislature and the executive take specific action. So I think that's, I think I can, in terms of like informing the committee of that, like I said, I'm happy to share the letters with the committee, but I don't know in terms of our charge as a committee what that would do, what, how that would change our business that we're conducting.
Well, I'd like an opportunity, not right now, because you have a whole agenda to get through, but I would like an opportunity to make that connection.
To respond individually, not as a committee. Is that what you're saying?
Not even to, that's up to our each individual and to the committee, but just to address the connection.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we
in the context of the mission.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we'll. I don't really have that at a new business agenda item, but I think we will. Basically, what we're going to be speaking mostly with Mark and Robert today about what we discussed at our last meeting, and then I think at the end, if we want to hear from you, Manager, about that, we can. So, welcome.
Thank you.
Mark and Robert. Robert, it's nice to meet you. I wanted to just give a recap for everyone of what we discussed at our last meeting in terms of how we want to have regular touch points with the UCRA. We spent some time looking through the recycling law and the what this committee is charged with doing. We're an oversight committee of the recycling law, which is enforced by the UCRA. So we kind of both answer to you and advise the UCRA, but also the legislature. And one of the things that we saw is that for the compliance of the law, in that section, the compliance officer reports quarterly to the Recycling Oversight Committee. It doesn't really say exactly what that report is, so we sort of talked about that, but I understand that you report to the agency monthly and so have touch points of information. So we'd like to hear about that, and then I had circulated to Mark a few questions about data that I think as we're having this discussion, we can talk about as well. So.
Yes, I brought copies for everybody.
Great.
And I can also send it out monthly. I mean, if you guys do want to read them, if you give me an email, I can send them as well.
Okay.
Wait, that's just for November, December, and January. And over time, I got Stewart's shop to implement recycling, which was kind of easy to do because they're local.
So, when you say implement recycling, you mean at the pump. They were always recycling.
Yeah, they were always recycling, but then I got recycling containers at the pump and at the entrances as you walk in. And then a few local gas stations with the local owners. I got to implement recycling as well at the pumps and at the entrances. I'm trying to get Quick Check to implement the recycling at the pumps and at the entrances, but their management team is in Arkansas, and they've been very difficult to reach. I met with the local operation manager, but she doesn't have the authority to make that decision due to budget issues and things like that. So that has to come from the upper management. So I emailed their lawyer and the email that she gave me for the management in Arkansas, and I'm still waiting response for that. My big focus is multifamily dwellings, which I've been having a lot of success with once I get a hold of the landlords. Most of them just don't know about the law, is kind of the consensus that I get. Most of the time, I get in contact, I give them a copy of the law, I meet with them, and then they contact the haulers, and they implement recycling. The ones that don't answer, I've been utilizing the haulers, because ultimately, they're responsible for what's going into their trucks. So I have them reach out to the landlords, because they have better contact information for them, and that's been working for me as well. So I'm just trying to find things that I can utilize myself to strengthen this law and just kind of work around the law. And then once we do have a hearing officer, things will definitely come together. That's kind of the missing piece right now, is the hearing officer.
Is there a way to tie the recycling with the garbage collection so that they can't have garbage collection unless they have recycling?
I would love to see it all in one package. That's kind of out of my...
So the law requires the haulers to offer it and requires the businesses to recycle. Does not require the haulers to provide recycling, because the businesses could think they can bring their recycling to us. There's other things they can do. And there's no flow control on recycling, so they could set up. So somebody does something with waste management. Waste management has to offer recycling, but they charge a separate fee for recycling, especially for commercial businesses. One thing that you'll see us coming with in the next couple of months, as soon as it's reviewed and approved by our board, is we have a lot of recommended changes that our agency counsel and Robert and our director of sustainability is proposing to the legislature for 304. And some of that is in there, which would be like charge a flat fee for waste and include recycling instead of charging multiple different things. So we are looking at ways to make 304 better. We would send it to this committee as well as the Energy and Environment Committee of the legislature.
Manager?
Yeah. Back in the day, the agency worked very closely with the Department of Health, and if a hauler was picking up MSW that also had recyclables in it, and did not do the education and give their customer a warning, and then if the customer still didn't recycle, not pick up mixed waste that had regulated recyclables, the next time they were up for relicensing, there was a cooperation between the agency and Department of Health, and they were not going to receive their next year's permit to operate until they addressed and corrected the deficit. Is there any communication with the Department of Health?
So I think you're probably referring to a time prior to flow control. So now that we have flow control, it's hard to say, I mean, that you're not going to provide a license, because then you're basically shutting down the business. They cannot pick up waste because they cannot bring it anywhere else. And the department, the County Department of Health really believes that their role, we provide licenses, they provide licenses. It's a dual path. They really, like, they will look at the truck and make sure that it has a broom and some equipment to clean up a spill, and basically they give their permit license at that point. And then they have to apply to us for a flow control license. We've considered compliance when it comes to that, but again, having flow control and being the only place that waste can be accepted, it's hard to say to a hauler and then a whole customer base that would have their MSW service suspended, essentially, that we're not going to give you a license without. So things we've considered, but we haven't gone that route yet. As Robert said, we are waiting for a hearing officer, an independent hearing officer, to be appointed by the legislature, which is required under the law. It's been a long time to try to find an attorney. You really need three pieces in order for enforcement and compliance to work. You need a compliance officer, you need agency counsel to bring charges, and you need an independent hearing officer to hear anybody who wants to appeal or to have their administrative hearing heard. If you don't have all three of those pieces, you can't do any of them. You can write letters on compliance, you can do various things. So in my 2 years at the agency, when I started, we had the hearing officer in place. We had an agency counsel. We did not have a compliance officer. Then we had a compliance officer. We didn't have an agency counsel. Then we didn't have an independent hearing, a hearing officer. So in February, they're appointing a hearing officer because we found somebody willing to do it. It's hard to find attorneys right now. That person will be appointed. Hopefully Robert will still be there, and our agency counsel as well, and we'll move forward.
So how would you characterize the need right now? I mean, how often is there a compliance situation that's so severe that that person should be hauled in for hearing officer?
I mean, certain haulers, daily. You know, there's only so many, again, without this administrative hearing officer, there's only so many inspections, there's only so many photos, there's only so many videos I can take. But I think once we have everything in place and we start to really manage what these guys are bringing in and then document it.
And fines.
I think it will alleviate, especially the smaller haulers that are doing it. I think they'll be more inclined. The bigger ones may be a little bit harder to get and check, but definitely the medium size and the smaller haulers, I think, would definitely hopefully get to 100%. Close to it.
And haulers like the solar and not the biggest problem anybody has, right?
It depends on the driver, honestly. Oh, really? I mean, a lot of it comes down to drivers, routes, and time of day. If a driver's truck is you know, 3/4 full, then it's 3:30. Is he, then he's in Marlboro. Is he going to drive all the way to the New Paltz to dump and then go back out?
Things, right?
Yeah, so there's a lot that goes into it. And then I've also been spending a lot of time at the transfer station, so I think that's a valuable tool for all the residents of the county, especially with a lot of new clientele coming in that recycles very differently than we do in Ulster County. Having those workers educated and up to date with the recycling requirements can only help. I mean, if I can teach you something and you reach out to 7 or 8 people and let them, word of mouth goes a long way and really helps with the education part of it.
Jonathan, I was just going to mention that Jonathan told us that the haulers don't really want to be the enforcers because they have a client relationship that they're trying to protect. So that's a bit of an obstacle for you because you can only, even if you lean on the haulers, their boss is probably saying, don't piss off the customer, right?
It's a little bit of a tough position. So far, you know, only done with 2 of the haulers, and they've pretty much got 100% compliance from the customers. But again, if I'm sure if the landlord, you know, curses them out or however, or gets agitated, I'm sure they wouldn't push it too far, you know, because they don't want to lose that clientele.
So if I've had reports from very reliable people that they switched to taking the recyclables to the recycling center themselves because the hauler was taking their store separated recyclables and putting them in the dumpster and saying that they get separated later. And I don't think that is in compliance. If they collect them separately and then take them to their own facility, they can do that because there isn't flow control. But if someone called and said, my hauler is mixing my recyclables with my garbage, and in this case they called several times and there was no follow-up, that they didn't have a return call. But moving forward, if that is reported, would you follow up?
Yes. Depending on the hauler and the call, the trucks do have the capabilities to separate once there's a lever that the driver hits.
Dual body truck.
Dual body. So a lot of the complaints that I've gotten from residents where I went and investigated, they've sent me the license plates for the trucks. You know, I've actually met with the hauler. They showed me how it works. And a lot of the residents don't understand that either. But
that's, I believe that to be
when
true.
I do my inspections at the transfer stations, that gives me the ability to see if these drivers are utilizing that capability or not, or if they're just dumping it all into the same compartments. So that's why I do them monthly, just to kind of see. And I have the license plates of the trucks. I see what's coming in, which ones are contaminated, which ones aren't.
But you follow up with any complaints
and
talk about the resolution.
Yes.
So, I mean, unless they're not leaving a number, because some people call the recycling hotline, if they don't leave any information on how we can get a hold of them, then we have no way of reaching back out. But if they want a call back, we will tip it. Like, we will call them back and let them know, I checked into this and this was the answer.
A lot of them are anonymous, especially the ones that live in apartment complexes, because they don't want the landlord to retaliate against them. So they don't leave the callback information or emails. But, I mean, I try to encourage them to give me as much information that it is anonymous, you know, that I won't use their name or apartment number. So,
if you know of a cooperative landlord, there's a vacancy on this committee for multifamily dwelling, and somebody who has cooperated and has a system that's working for the hauler and for the tenant. So.
Okay,
thank you.
This is Supervisor Nowen talking. Robert, if you could just kind of walk us through a little bit of your approach, because I'm reading this report, it sounds like you're doing a mix of things.
Yeah, so I kind of, there was no blueprint for this job when I took over. So I just kind of hit the ground running in one direction. It was kind of been trial and error just to kind of see what works, what doesn't work. So I have days where I know certain haulers are at the flow control violations, that I have certain days where I'm at the transfer stations doing inspections. So just kind of knowing, investigating and knowing where these trucks are going to be at, what times they're going to be there. And then obviously the transfer stations are just random when I go visit the transfer stations. So it's just kind of like every day something different usually.
And is there like in building department, say we have like a schedule of like fire inspections, is there like a schedule for some of the bigger, I'm thinking about like the institutional type organizations, do you have like a schedule for that, or right now is it just sort of as the complaints come in? And you said that you were focusing on I'm trying to remember what I just said. You were focusing, I read somewhere where you said that you're focusing on
the beer and liquor stores.
Wine and liquor stores,
yeah. So the wine and liquor stores, I picked just 12 anonymous ones, reached out. They all had a recycling plan, so they pretty much have cardboard. I mean, that was
expensive.
They, so the distributors either take the cardboard back or they're all utilizing the haulers. So I kind of moved on from them, you know. I did a small sample, and if I didn't find any out of those 12, so now I'm going to move on to the next.
Mm-hmm.
The parks, obviously, is something, but now that it's winter time, you know, it's kind of hard. But once spring hits, that's what I'll focus on, getting all the local parks that have recycling.
The gas stations for the prior quarter, trying to get them to recycle at the pump.
So just trying to be kind of all over the place. Just, you know, I don't want to focus too much on one area, you know. And then I'll circle back to the gas stations, and, you know, if I'm out on the road and I see a gas station that doesn't have recycling, I'll stop in, I have to talk to the manager, and, you know, usually the manager's not there, but they'll give me a contact information, and, you know, most of the time they'll get in touch with me, which is nice.
One other question, not specifically about compliance, but about the mission, is, are there materials that are currently regulated that maybe should no longer be regulated, or the other way around, are there materials that are not yet regulated for which there are markets? Because that's the primary mission of the Recycling Oversight Committee.
Yeah. So I have not come across regulated recyclables that I believe we should take off. I mean, there are regulated recyclables that we lose money on,
mm-hmm.
that we still believe should be recycled. Glass, for instance, we'll never make money off of glass, but glass should be recycled, so we take it as a loss.
Before you go on, can I ask you to pause on glass and just say that originally the containers at the municipal recycling drop-off centers for glass had a large section for clear, a smaller section for green, and a very small section for brown, which is called amber. And we were able to market 100% of the material because it was separated by color and able to be recycled in that way. So it's just a thought in terms of maximum waste diversion.
Yeah, I mean, we send our glass to Tomra, which is one of the larger recyclers now at this point. This was more recent, within the last month or so that we've connected with them. And they actually do a lot of the recycling themselves. We still pay in order to get rid of the glass. We're not paid for it, and in our conversations with them, it wouldn't matter whether we separate it by color or not.
Do they pick it up, or do we have to?
No, we have to bring it to
and what's the name of the company?
Albany, Tomra, Tomra.
Thank you.
Good thing. I'm Claudia Joseph speaking, and I think that's a very good point Manitou had, that when I was in California, there was always separation by color, and I wondered why. I mean, I know it's an extra step, and what I wasn't clear on that response was if there is a different market for separated glass than there is for combined, that there's no market. And what I had on my list today is which recycling stream is most profitable. I feel like we're here to help you, and that if you can tell us that and point us in the right direction, that would be most effective.
Yeah, I mean, currently, and it all fluctuates. Plastics right now, we're holding our plastics because mm-hmm. they're like a penny or two a pound. Mm-hmm. Typically, fiber. So your OCC, even that I think is down towards $40 a ton.
What is OCC?
Old corrugated cardboard. So anything cardboard related is typically on the higher end of our markets.
But not fiber, meaning clothing fabric.
No,
just
so fiber is
cardboard.
Like paper. So when you're talking about recyclables, and especially with like dual stream. Your fiber is your paper, your cardboard,
mm-hmm.
and then you have your containers, which is your glass, your plastics, and your metals.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a dual streamer, right? Like, I know one of the questions you had was, like, tonnages and other things. So, like, we do 6,000 tons total of recycling dual stream. That's about a quarter of the recycling that's done in Ulster County. We have annual recycling reports because we're the planning unit for Ulster County and not just the solid waste agency. We send out requests for data to all of the generators, waste generators on our annual recycling report. Our 24 report is just getting wrapped up at the end of 25, we're in 26, but the board was just sent an executive summary. When Angelina's finished and that's complete, I'll make sure you all have that. But that is all self-reporting, so
mm-hmm.
the data is not the best because we're asking mm-hmm. people to self-report, but we've been told by the DC, like the DC sends other agencies to us to help them collect information because they believe we do it well. I think we do it well. I don't think we do it as good as it should eventually be. Because there's a lot of gaps. And so, like, the goals of the agency towards diversion kind of almost zero waste is 30-60-90, so diverting 30% of all waste by 2030, which we're essentially, by the numbers, there, but again, I need to get the data clarified and it's all self-reporting. Then 60% by 2040 and 90% by 2050. That's our goals. And 90% is considered, that's what the zero waste folks consider zero waste is 90%. So the New York State Solid Waste Management Plan that came out 2 years ago has a big focus on circular economy and is calling on agencies like ours, municipalities, all waste handlers to divert 85% of their waste by 2050. So we're just going slightly higher.
Are you able to recycle cardboard with the cellophane tape over it?
With cellophane?
Yeah, remove the tape from your cardboard.
No, I don't. We don't remove the tape.
So you're able?
I think there was one more question, which was, is there a separate market for, and what does that look like for separated glass?
Right, and there's not. From what we, like what Tom has told us and others, like there is not a.
Okay. I didn't know if it was just Tom or if there were others.
Well, so Tom is the best that we found as far as, like, I think we're only paying like $50 a ton as opposed to over $100 for glass.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not getting paid for it like other.
You're paying for it.
Recyclables, yeah. Materials, but.
This may be just too much, but, I'm Penny Coleman. I visited the Hurley transfer station 4 or 5 years ago, and they were separating the bottles, and then returning them whole, not smashed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious about whether or not that's just too hard to implement, or whether or not there's more of a market for that.
Well, they have the right to do that under the law, is that they can take returnables, deposit. They are doing that because they're getting the deposits for them.
Okay.
So any of the town MRDCs
can
do that, and they can return it. If they're going to put it in a container, it's going to go to us, and likely some of it's going to get broken.
Yeah, Rosendale just diverts. There's a barrel by the container where you have the option of putting in the redeemable.
These were not necessarily even labeled bottles.
I wonder if it's redeemable without a label.
You were saying they go to you? The deposit bottles?
The deposit bottles don't come.
Oh, okay. But that data does have to get self-reported also, or it should be reported on the annual report.
Do you have to ship it as glass colored? I mean, does it all have to be smashed up first?
Doesn't have to.
They don't care. So if the whole bottles are broken, that doesn't matter.
The deposit bottles would come to you if they're just not kept separate and they're just...
Yeah, they don't choose to take them to a redemption center.
Does the agency do any of its own marketing, or do you just use brokers?
Yeah, so for like Tomra, we didn't use a broker. And we work with different brokers, not all just the same, but we do most of it through a broker.
They typically
will add hours to a larger load and get a better price. Whereas if we were marketing us, again, we do 6,000 tons of recyclables throughout the entire year, do about 300 tons of plastic, like, you know.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, but I think that brokers are focused on the economics and maybe at the expense of maximizing waste diversion. So I know that... back in the day, and you'll have to excuse my history, but it's real, we had a staff person that focused on marketing and a compliance officer. I'm trying to remember, his last name is Davis. I'd love to put you in touch with him. He did a magnificent job, and it just might be interesting to speak with him.
Anyway. Yeah, that lives in the operations side. So, I mean, if you want to connect me to like the marketing and the brokering is all down in our operations. It wouldn't necessarily be in our compliance. But happy to connect them to the folks that we can make a connection.
Do you happen to know, because I tried to find out, where the money from the deposit bottles actually goes?
From who? Like,
when you take your bottles to the bottle depot.
Yeah.
Who gets that money?
A lot of the bottle depot gets some amount of the money, and then I believe it goes back potentially to the main. I don't know, but I know the redemption companies get a percentage of it, and then it may go back to the end. Like, those are deposit recyclables because they end up going back to the manufacturers and are recycled into the same product. So, like, your big distributors receive back the...
Okay. I just found that to be really a difficult question to answer when I tried to find out, and there was something about the state using it for future recycling programs or something.
I mean, it could be what funds part of the MWRR program.
Yeah, okay.
But I know, like, the big push for the bigger, better bottle bill is to increase the amount partially to increase the amount that goes to the redemption centers, because many of them are closing. They're not making enough money, especially in like the North Country and other places that are more rural. Like, you don't find redemption centers very often.
Thanks.
One question I have, this is Erin speaking, is just in terms of enforcement, it makes sense when you go to a liquor store to see if they have a recycling plan and if they're following it. Our town just passed a recycling policy so that we got lots of climate smart points, but it's being followed, which is great. are there waste audits that are done just to get a sense of, like, overall in the waste stream, are there things, I understand, like, in like adding a mandated recycling, but, like, are there, how successful is the recycling law?
Yeah. So we have Stony Brook University that's under a contract with the New York State DEC that comes in annually and does a waste audit. That was one of your bullet points that you sent me this afternoon, so I will provide that. We have about 21 to 24, so we have 3 years of data.
Okay.
So 70% of our waste is made up of three main items in the waste audit categories. I have these numbers. I just looked at it, but it's somewhere in the 28% range for cardboard and paper, so fiber. That could be contaminated, that's not recyclable, or it could be recyclable. It's somewhere, in 24, it was 22% plastic. Again, various, not all plastics recyclable and various stages of recycling. And then the other part that makes up the 70%, so a little over 20% was food waste.
What was the last one?
Food waste. So cardboard slash paper was the, and they have their category, it's just called paper, but that includes cardboard. I don't know, actually, on that.
Because food waste is the only
I believe with it's thing. Weight, but.
Yeah, weight. Yeah, so that's mostly water, that's 90%. Food waste is 90%.
I have a quick question. Hi, this is Poppy Cannon Reese. How are you feeling about working with the neighboring counties? I just know that down where we are, we're like right on the border of Sullivan, and the waste is handled very differently in Sullivan. So what's your current movement toward working with neighboring counties?
I'm on calls with the neighboring counties on a solid waste group that includes everybody, but, I mean, Green is not typically involved because they're not Hudson Valley. So
right.
It's our DC region, but we meet at least quarterly.
Mm-hmm.
But oftentimes I'll have conversations with Mark, who runs Sullivan County, more often than that, and Orange County and Dutchess County. So I would, waste is a regional issue, so we're all going through the same kind of crisis, which is landfill capacity is dwindling. New York State as a state, we send 25,000 tons of waste to in-state landfills every day,
mm-hmm.
9 million tons a year. I'm on a press conference tomorrow with Beyond Plastics that'll have myself and somebody from Albany County who's the new comptroller and just talking about the benefits of the Packaging Reduction Infrastructure Act, PREA.
Mm-hmm.
So I've gone up and advocated up in Albany two or three times last year for that. I was there the last week of session, multiple days to try to get that passed. Luckily, it passed the committees that it needs to pass, and so we just need the Senate to pass it on the floor and the Assembly to pass it on the floor, and then the governor to commit to signing it. But that would be a 30% reduction in packaging, which would be very helpful. A lot of what I just told you about, basically 50% of our waste is paper and plastic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a big portion of that is packaging. And then there's also funding mechanisms for agencies and municipalities like mine.
Yeah.
This is Sue Nolly, and I missed, how would the 30% reduction happen?
That's part of the extended producer responsibility, the PREA, which is the Packaging Reduction and Recycling Infrastructure Act. It's a requirement of the act. So the manufacturers have to reduce production of packaging by 30% over a time period.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Claudia speaking. And there is a rally in February, I saw on the website.
February 9th.
That's pretty great, and I'll try to promote that, which that's the kind of thing I'm looking for, is what can we do to support the work you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I did read the report, and I was surprised to find that textiles can be stained or torn. Is that the yellow drop boxes that I see around that accept that? Because I was surprised. I thought it was just usable clothing that people were dropping off.
Are you talking about at our what report?
The Angelina's.
Oh, okay.
And or the code 304, whatever. Maybe it was on that. I read a couple things that were sent to me that described what is collected.
At our textile boxes, or
that's
just
what I thought it said, that your textile boxes accept ripped and stained clothes. And I'm like, really? Is that really useful?
Well, we only have one textile box. That's why I don't know what report you're referring to.
It was one of the two links that we got.
That was sent
on this agenda?
I tried to study up before I came.
The only ones on this agenda were the code, the chapter 304 and the...
Oh, on the Ulster County, the solid local solid waste management plan, maybe?
Yes.
Okay.
Plan.
All right. I'd have to go back and look at the textile section. But, no, I mean, so... good, like, in good condition clothing, right, can be used, it can be diverted for reuse and sold as clothing. Clothing that is not in good condition, worn, stained, can be turned into rags and other things.
And is there a market for that?
Yes.
There is?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So that's something we would, because as a person who doesn't like throwing things away, I did not know that my stained and ripped clothing could be useful.
But you have to look at, I mean, you have to look at where you're put. If you're putting it in a box that says it's going to a church, then maybe...
Then no, it's not.
It's not.
No, I don't
reusable.
Want to give it to Salvation Army. So that's what I'm saying, is that I discovered this and I don't understand what you want us to do. What action should I take with that material?
You can... I mean, as long as it's not, like, I don't think we would want something soaked. But, like, you can put it in our boxes, and the organization that we work with, they separated it out. Some of the textiles that's in worse condition goes out of country and is turned, again, into other, like, garments. But
yeah, or rag rugs or
rags
something.
Rags and rugs.
Yeah.
Insulation.
But
you can bring it to our box, and you can...
Okay. I think it might be helpful if we had some sort of chart of highest use, you know, that the sorting itself is expensive and time-consuming on a lot of these things. So the more we can train consumers to pre-sort their material and put it in the right place, that would help.
Sure.
But I'm not seeing messaging on that. I'm not seeing messaging on... using the transfer stations, that the only way I found it when I moved here was because a friend told me that I don't see any, I mean, would it be a benefit for more people to use the waste transfer stations? That's the question I had.
Yeah, so this year the board approved a budget that raised our tipping fee to $150 for the haulers and anybody that comes into the agency, and kept it at $135 for the municipal recycling drop centers. And I just continue to call it that because that's what they're called. I understand that people call them down transfer stations, but they are supposed to be recycling centers first, and then that is what they're registered as. That is how they are supposed to operate. So recycling first and then MSW second. They really shouldn't take, I mean, residential construction and demolition degrees one thing, but the focus when those were started was on recycling, and so we have two transfer stations. That's why I call the towns. I mean, they are MRDCs, but we can call them town transfer stations to make it less complicated. We are only charging them $135. We kept them flat to encourage people to go there.
They have to know about them.
Right, and so the towns operate those, so the towns should really be doing a lot of outreach. We have things on our website and we have sections like that. If somebody's looking for a place to go in the town, we have all that information up there. But it's not really on us to necessarily provide outreach on that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then we're like kind of picking.
Yeah.
So it's kind of in Angelina's field, like she was talking about when she did a report to contact the town and get them more up to speed on recycling.
Yes, she does that. She works with the towns
yes,
to try
yes,
to make sure everybody has the same signage, same education from us. We provide the towns with the education
and to
materials.
Put something on their website.
Yeah, so yes. We just did the meeting that you were at that she was talking about, we did a review of all the town websites and just looked at like the differences and kind of shared a best practice guide with all of the towns, which we've done recently.
Yeah, that's good.
Mark, are there boxes at the transfer station?
It depends. So it's all over. I mean, some do. Some have.
Okay.
Some collect textiles.
Uh-huh.
Some collect electronics. Some collect Freon. Like, that was kind of the point of what we were doing, is trying to gather all the information that was out there. So it's very different depending on town what they collect. Some do food waste, sort of separate it and turn it into compost. Some have reuse. It's all varied.
Did you get the grant?
No.
Oh.
Sorry.
It's okay.
No, it's not.
They're focused on building pedestrian trails and shaded parks.
Well, so two things. I sent Mark a list of things that we had discussed would be nice, and I don't know if you wanted to comment on any of those.
I don't think I want to take time up tonight. What I will say is I will gather this information.
Okay, but there wasn't anything on it that you were like, we can't provide this, or?
No, because I can provide you the way I thought it. We can break down the mandated recyclables both through the recycling report and we do our own report. I can share like financial data. For 2025, we would have had, and I want to confirm this, but it's around, we would have had to charge $50. So we don't charge for recycling at our dual stream. It's totally free, and it's basically subsidized by the tipping fee. If we wanted to break even on recycling, we would have had to charge around $50 a ton for 2025. That's where it ended.
Okay.
Somewhere.
It's still a lot less than the
single stream down in Beacon's $140. So
yeah,
it is much less.
Yeah.
I would like to request when you come back to answer those questions. I think it's important for the committee to understand the repower and circular economy work that's going on, and also the global energy proposal. It's better to come from the horse's mouth.
Yeah, I was going to, I mean, I think Aaron had wanted me to talk a little bit about that tonight, which I can do as far as she sent me a bullet point. I'm going to put together all these reports. I'm not going to wait until I come back. And I think probably, like, Robert will come in quarterly.
Great.
Especially towards the end of last year, like, before the committee was reappointed. I was trying to come to most, if not all, the meetings. You have a liaison here as well from the agency and Erica from the board. But, like, I will attend as many of the meetings as I can, but I don't anticipate on waiting to get you all this information so that you, in the meantime, can read the information next month if you have questions.
Yeah.
You can dig deeper.
Yeah, so the two things were, one, I just wanted the committee to know that I had sent the list of things that we had compiled that we wanted to see, but I didn't do it until today. So Mark will gather that stuff. And then the second thing is he was going to talk a little bit about the waste diversion efforts. Or what was it that you were
Yeah, so just the letters, the kind of dueling letters. you probably don't have anything else for Robert?
I don't. Does anyone have any other things for enforcement? Compliance?
You're good. All right. So, Global Energy.
Thank you so much.
So, you'll all get the copy of the letter that went out from Kingston Citizens, it sounds like. Basically, their ask to the legislature and the executive was to finish the zero waste implementation plan that the county legislature started 6 years ago, and that the agency hold off on any new major infrastructure projects in the meantime. My letter, I pushed back and said the agency can't pause on projects while we wait for the legislature to finish the zero waste implementation plan. There was a time when the agency was focused on looking at the zero waste implementation plan, and we were gathering quotes to kind of find out how much it would cost us to finish it. What I didn't want to have happen was dueling plans. So while we were in the process of doing that, the legislature was moving forward with finishing the zero waste implementation plan as well. And so I said to the chair of the committee, Energy and Environment, and the Energy and Environment Committee, I was very blunt. I said, I don't know what you all are going to implement, but because it's an implementation plan, and we are a state public benefit corporation. We are not a county department. So the legislature can write policy. The Recycling Oversight Committee is an advisory committee, and also you all add and remove regulated recyclables. But we also have our own enacting statute that sets our mission and what we need to do. They wanted to move forward with the zero waste implementation plan, so we took a step back. So it's at the legislature right now. They've gone out with the purchasing department on an RFQ. I believe somebody's been selected. I've been told that the agency will be involved in helping finish that plan, but we have not been involved up until this point. And it was not budgeted for, so I don't, and it was very expensive in the range of proposals. So I don't know where that's at. What we can't do as an agency is hold off on major new infrastructure investments until this happens. We have the Repower project, and this was in my letter. And then there was another letter in response that said, we aren't really talking about new major infrastructure improvements. We're really talking about this one project. So I'll talk to you all about it. Mm-hmm. When the agency decided to pause the landfill work that we did, we said, we're going to focus on diversion. And I'm going to put out this RFP, and then we're going to come back eventually to the landfill work, whether it's a regional landfill or a local landfill. We went out to RFP in May of last year. We received 7 proposals in July. We had a 7-person committee that was staff, board members, and a member of the executive staff review the 7 proposals. We shrank those 7 proposals to 3. All 3 had some combination of mixed waste, a dirty MRF, which is mixed waste processing, and the end product was anaerobic digestion. The board received 3 proposals, presentations, I should say, from the 3 selected by the committee. The board decided to move forward with one of the proposals, which was Global Energy, which was also the highest selected by the evaluation committee had. Like, just so that you were all aware, like, the evaluation committee scored things, they also scored Global Energy as the highest. We are now in a 6-month process of doing further due diligence and contract negotiations. Does not mean that because we awarded this RFP that this project will ever come to fruition. There needs to be a meeting of minds between the agency and the Global Energy team. Global Energy is really a financing company, and they are the lead on this project. They have an entire team underneath them. So Van Dyke, who builds MRF equipment and, you know, conveyor belts, eddy currents, they use AI, they use all these to separate out the MRF. So all of our waste would be committed, because we're not paying for anything up front. We're not budgeting a capital expenditure for this project. We're essentially saying, for the next 20 years, we'll commit all of our waste to you. Currently, it's 100,000 tons. Mm-hmm. If it ever becomes less than 100,000 tons, then we'll work with regional partners to find a way to continue to have 100,000 tons coming through there. And that will not be an issue, because even if all of the counties around us, which many of them aren't looking at zero waste now, but even if they did, reducing the amount of waste by zero waste, we'd still have enough to make up that, right? And so bringing that waste in, 20% gets diverted in the waste, out of the waste stream, by being regulated recyclables that we are able to recover from MSW, so that's sold back into the recycling markets. 50% is organic, so your soil, cardboard, paper, and food waste. That all goes through a process from a company called EconWord. It's thermal hydrolysis, so it's steam. The steam cleans and compresses, so it takes about 30% of the volume out of all of these materials. And then that separates out between inerts, which is about 30%, which still has to go to a landfill, but again, the volume is lower. The organics are then sent to an anaerobic. This is all either on, it's all in one spot. So when I say sent to, I'm really talking about like next door. It goes through anaerobic digestion. The anaerobic digester will create both a digestate, which is the leftover, but it also creates a renewable natural gas. The company is out of the methane, which will likely be put into the pipeline and help replace the need for fossil fuel natural gas. And the digestate will either be, if the testing and quality control allows it to be land applicated, which I have doubts on, I think everybody has doubts on, it would be land applicated if possible. Otherwise, it would be used as a beneficial use for alternative daily cover at a landfill. So landfills have to, alternative daily cover at a landfill. Okay. So at the end of the day, after a landfill receives in waste, it has to get covered.
Get compressed.
So that's the project. I know, you know, from the letter, some of the concerns are that we'd have to do a put or pay, which basically means that commitment. And so the question is, how are we going to partake in zero waste? The agency is committed to the zero waste hierarchy, which is refuse, reduce, reuse, recycle, compost, then we're down here, and then landfilling, and then there's no incineration. That's the zero waste hierarchy. We're committed to that. If we do a fantastic job through projects like the Repower project, like the Repower projects for reuse, we're looking at maximum diverting 5% of the reusable goods. And in the not complete draft of the Zero Waste Implementation Plan, they acknowledge that 5% of the waste stream is reusable goods. So we are maximizing that amount through the Repower project. We are working on source separating food waste. We went for a grant with the state. We didn't get it this year. We're going to have to figure out, but we want each of the town transfer stations, MRDCs, to be able to process compost on site. So we're working with them to do that. We're working with them to be spokes in the Repower project to collect reusable goods. We're not backing away from our commitment to zero waste. The reality is this is a last resort. There will, in the next 20 years, be enough of that waste to make this financially viable. We're not paying anything for it up front. We're not operating it. It'll bring somewhere between 20 to 30 new good-paying jobs to the county, and we'll be able to divert up to 70% of our waste. They've committed to 65, but they've set upwards of 70. So, you know, I've seen some things out there where people are opposing various different parts of it, and again, a lot of it has to do with committing of waste. What I'll say is we have regional partners. I would love to work with the Sullivan County and say, Sullivan County, commit your waste here, but build a landfill. You bring your waste here. We'll divert 70% of it, and then we'll send your waste and our waste back to the landfill. Like, we're going to work with regional partners to get this done, and it won't impact our ability to reduce waste, to go through the rest of the zero waste hierarchy.
Sounds
and there's a chance none of it happens. That's the reality. We're far from the finish
beginning.
Line on this project. We are at the beginning. We're at the starting line.
Mark, can I just ask a clarifying question? When you're talking about the 100,000 tons of waste, is that everything turns into single stream, or that's the recyclables you're talking, the regulated recyclables that are in that stream are what would be in it currently?
So the 100,000 tons of MSW is what we receive. That's not,
okay.
That is from the haulers. We receive last year we did 134,500 tons of waste, total waste. That was a combination of MSW, which is your haulers, your participable waste, and construction and demolition debris was about 35. So 100 and then 35,000. We are keeping our dual stream MRF open.
Okay.
This is the regulated recyclables that are in MSW are in MSW now, even though there's single stream, even though there's dual stream. In the waste characterization study, that's what it shows, that there's that amount.
Well, yeah, that I just wanted to clarify because that is a very positive outcome of something like this. Because right now, those are in the waste stream and not being diverted yet.
And do you have a proposed location for doing the anaerobic digestion?
So the proposal that was sent to us is for on-site.
Where you are in?
Where we are, so building off the back of our current transfer station.
Mm-hmm.
These type of facilities require water and electricity that we, more than we have access.
Mm-hmm.
We're on a well, mm-hmm. we have a leach field, so we are looking at other sites because that's about $8 million plus in infrastructure upgrades just to build. So it increases the cost of the proposal by $8 million to build it on our site, meaning if we can find something cheaper, and there are properties that feed right into wastewater treatment plants and other things that we might be able to do. We are looking to, we're trying to stick within the town of Ulster because we don't want to drive our, wherever they set this facility up, waste comes to us, gets trucked to them.
Someplace else, mm-hmm. yeah.
So our goal is to reduce trucking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't reduce trucking if we build this
mm-hmm.
in Ellenville,
mm-hmm.
truck our stuff to Ellenville, and then have to truck 30% of it to the landfill.
Yeah.
Unless we team up with Sullivan, then maybe Ellenville makes sense. We're not even looking at Ellenville.
What about the land that the agency has down below along the river?
The 70 acres was part of the RFP.
Yeah.
They believe there was space on our current footprint that was better. But it's all the same. If it's on our site, whether it's down the hill by the walk, it's all the same as far as having to pipe water
mm-hmm.
and wastewater away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the infrastructure costs are still there,
yeah.
even if it's on. They believe it's more cost efficient to build it off of our site and then do the anaerobic digester kind of in the woods in between the administration building and the transfer station floor.
A caution on the site down by the river, that if this goes through during its life cycle, we're going to be seeing sea level rise and mm-hmm. storms. And
yeah, we're not really looking there.
So, but is there room up above?
Yeah, that's where they, they came out, they walked it, that's where they proposed it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, not the ideal location, so part of getting their costs down is trying to find somewhere else. There is a property, it's so far from being a deal that I just don't even want to talk about it.
One other comment, just to be sure to remind people, if I may. One of the reasons that the legislature approved the local solid waste plan was with the understanding that there would be a zero waste implementation plan. And I appreciate the good work that the agency is doing with Repower and composting and Did I understand that the expansion of the composting facility finally got approved?
No.
No. Still.
Oh, sorry.
$7,500.
We got, I mean, which I don't consider an expansion because we have the capacity to do it.
Yeah.
So we're not actually changing anything operational,
yeah,
but
yeah,
our permit capacity,
okay,
went from 5,000 to 7,500 finally. Yes.
And ultimately, it probably needs to go to 10, I think.
Yes, that's our goal.
Yep.
But you have to prove need, so we needed to take incremental steps with the DEC.
And one question I got asked today is to be sure that the food waste and yard waste that is already being handled with,
source separation?
Well, but the aerated static pile? The pipes that aerate.
Yeah, that stays that way.
I'm sorry. That is not going to be mixed in.
That is not part of the plan.
Okay, because that was a question that came up today.
Yeah,
thank
so
you.
We intend on continuing to expand source separation.
And in terms of the legislature, since nothing is budgeted and I am not optimistic that a budget amendment will be passed to complete the zero waste plan, it seems to me that the way that should be completed is with a collaborative effort between the agency, the legislature, and the executive branch, and any other major stakeholders. And it's one of the reasons that I think that this committee is important, because it has multiple perspectives represented, and so far we've been working together well. So, but the agency is a separate authority, but there are connections to the executive branch and the legislature, and it seems to me that between them there are enough resources to get this done so that there is a context, and it shows up in the strategic planning you're already doing, that you're considering all the different goals. But if one of them can be to complete the zero waste plan, it addresses the issue that the legislature cited when we approved the local solid waste management plan. And it also sets a context for everything else. So, you know, I just hope there is a way to stop talking about and actually focus on getting it done. It's very close. A lot of work already went into it. It just needs to be completed. And not at $50,000 or $75,000. But anyway, thank you.
I mean, the market for things is the market for things. The county put out an RFQ, and that's the prices that they came back. And I believe they even sent it to the people who worked on it in the prior consultant. And so to say that it shouldn't be $50,000 to $100,000, I don't know who to say that. I will say the agency itself does not have the staff and bandwidth to complete the zero waste implementation plan. I have the draft. I've read it. I've read it this week. It is not as close to completion as many people think. There are portions of it that have nothing to do with the agency as far as passing laws and policy. So it's hard for me to say the agency should just pick it up and do it as staff. Or, like, it is going to be expensive. It's not something we budgeted for. What I'll say is we are implementing much of it right now. And so whether the plan needs to be completed or whether the work just needs to be done, I'm someone who believes the work needs to be done. And we have a solid waste management plan that's up at, like, we're not going to extend this likely. Our solid waste management plan ends in 2029, and we will need to put zero waste principles in the solid waste management plan. Like, that's what will have to happen even if the plan gets completed. We really have one planning document as far as the agency, the DEC, everyone is concerned, and that is the solid waste management plan. We have to follow that. That is a plan that is approved by the DEC. So even if we have the zero waste implementation plan done, we will need to come behind and put that into the local solid waste management plan in order to make it. So we could just write the solid waste management plan as a zero waste implementation plan when our current one expires and continue to do the work that's in the plan that's currently drafted, which we're doing. On January 1st, 3rd, we started recycling mattresses. So now mattresses that come into the agency are set aside. We're working on delays with some of the structures that will be built to help. Like, we have a roof that will cover it, and it'll be a separate building. Right now, if you were to go into our transfer station, one of our walls is lined with mattresses, and we have a company that's going to come pick it up as soon as we get to 35. They take it to Long Island, unfortunately, but they're working on getting a closer headquarters. They recycle the wood, they recycle all of the metals. They take the textiles and turn them into either sustainable sandbags or insulation for houses through beneficial use. They have a permit through the DC to do that. So, and that's the foam as well. So we are working through portions of the plan. The Reuse Innovation Center, the Repower Project is one that is in there as well. So, like, we're aware of the plan, we've read it, and we're working through it. At a certain point, like, it just gets back and forth on who should finish it. The legislature believes they should finish it because they started it. I don't know when they'll finish it. I don't want to have a dueling plan. That's all I'll say is, like, I'm not going to pick it up until, but I don't believe the agency should pick it up until we know whether the legislature is going to finish it or not, and I'm being told by them they are finishing it. So.
Okay.
Well, great. I think that's something to speak with the committee about, and they could authorize a budget amendment. It's hard in this budget, but there are funds available if there was support. But I just really want to stress to do it as a collaborative effort rather than the silos and, quite frankly, the power struggles that have been going on that I've observed. And if we work together, there's no stopping what Ulster County can do because we have all the right ingredients with the MRDCs and the work already going on at the agency. But it's also a good model to show that instead of struggling for who's in control, to use a collaborative process. I think a lot more could get done if we did. So enough on that.
Mark, that's really exciting about the mattresses. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. Are you being charged per mattress on that, or is there any
we
charge
are.
To the agency?
Yeah. So we thought that we might have it. This was one of the things that was held up by the permit modification at the DEC. So this has been in the work for, I don't know, 6 months, and I started working on this. And so I got quotes and other things. And then when we increased our tipping fee for mattresses for 2025, mm-hmm. we did that in the hopes that we would start this program. So we are being charged for it, but we cover it through the, I mean, I think we went from $5 to $10 per piece. So that covers that.
Okay.
Another recommendation on mattresses from the draft CWIP, and also I think in the Reform Committee report, is to work with the companies that sell the mattresses to take mattresses back. And there are systems elsewhere, and perhaps already to some extent in Ulster County, so it doesn't all have to come to the agency. Can I ask how much they're charging per mattress or per truckload?
$20 per mattress. $20. So it doesn't matter if it's a king size or
So if
and
somebody,
that's transportation and recycling.
If somebody brought a mattress to the agency, would that $20 charge apply?
So if someone brings a mattress to the agency, they get charged $10 per mattress box spring, so $10 per each piece.
Okay.
And then they also get charged the minimum weight requirement. So they get charged $20. So let's say somebody comes in and all they have is a box spring and a mattress. That's about 300 pounds. That would be the minimum $20 charge plus $10 per
yeah.
piece, so that would be $40. So that would cover our cost to do that.
Wow.
Yeah. And the towns get charged per mattress also.
Right.
So it shows
and those
them.
Get recycled as well.
Yeah. That's great.
Well, we're only, and we're doing it at the town of Ulster Transfer Station. We started there.
Mm-hmm.
So as the Recycling Oversight Committee, can we help move forward the collaboration between the legislature and ECCRA on this zero waste plan?
I want to just say that I think there's good collaboration generally between, I mean, there was a time where we were out of a contract that there was a little back and forth because I
mm-hmm.
think that there were some members of the legislature that saw us as more of a county department than an independent agency. And so they wanted to put together a contract that had more just requirements and other things. They wanted to lower our bonding authority to an amount that was not acceptable to the agency. I think we have great collaboration now with the county. I think the reality is that we just need to decide that this is a brand new legislature. They're walking in. They haven't even had a real meeting. They've had an organizational meeting. They need to determine whether they want to move forward the zero waste implementation plan. If they decide that it's not something they're interested in, the agency has a zero waste committee. Now, we didn't budget for a zero waste implementation plan for this year, so we'd have to make a decision on like whether it's something we could afford or whether it's something we want to look at next year. The one thing that was the request in the letter that we can't do is we can't stop our new and wait for the zero waste implementation plan. And there's nothing that we're doing right now that is that would harm the zero waste implementation plan once it comes out. I don't have a sense of urgency like some others do on the zero waste implementation plan because we're working to, and we have a separate circular economy strategy report coming out soon that Sustainable Hudson Valley did, which is slightly different. Circular economy and zero waste are kind of parallel paths, and they meet a lot, like, but they also have slightly different buttons, so.
Well, I do want to say that it was expected when the legislature passed the local solid waste plan that 2 years later, every 2 years, there would be a revision, that the zero waste implementation plan would have been submitted because it was so general in the local solid waste plan, and that was, what, 4 years ago or whatever. So it is a new legislature, there's no doubt about that, but I do think that there are many people on the legislature that were there when that happened. And I hope it will be honored.
It's a new agency as well, right? Like, three of our five board members were not there when that was talking about. You had three executive directors ago since that conversation happened. And so I'm not saying that it won't happen, but we've done biennial updates. Our biennial updates generally haven't changed the plan because our plan with the solid waste management plan is to draft a brand new plan that will have zero waste principles in it in 2029.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you typically make major revisions and need the DEC to approve new changes to your solid waste management plan, then you're extending the plan. So you have an opportunity to extend the plan every 2 years by 2 years up to 10 years. That's not really, like, as we've gone through and looked at all the things we're doing, it would make more sense to just have a new plan.
So, just on a slightly new topic, it was mentioned that the agency is going to have some proposed amendments to Ulster County Law 304. One of our functions as a committee is that any proposed changes would be sent to us for advisory comment. So I'm just curious.
Send it to you beforehand.
Yeah. So is there do you have a sense of what a timeline on that? I'm just curious.
Yeah. So I think we were looking at February or March to have it to the board, and then
I think we decided in December that
February or March.
February-ish.
Right?
Let's say or March.
Yeah. So, and I'm just like thinking realistically whether the staff's going to be ready to bring it to the board by February
mm-hmm.
or March.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be in that amount of time, and then we would send it to you all
okay.
for review, and then we would send it to the Energy and Environment.
Okay.
And what is the nature of the change?
A lot of it has to do with some of it's increasing the fines, some of it's the things that Robert talked about, just
enforcement
and other pieces, clarifying some of the definitions and other things
language.
To just make it the language easier to read. It's making it easier to enforce.
Yeah, do you think it's going to take more oversight personnel than what you have now?
Look, if we wanted full compliance, we could have 10 compliance.
Right. Right.
Like, but what's the balance of, like, I think we need to have all three of those pieces that I discussed in place, start to see fines come in, maybe in next year's budget start to look at fines as a way of funding positions for another compliance officer, and then when you have two, maybe your fines would fund that, you know, things we have to look at. You know, I don't know if we'll ever have 100% compliance on flow control and recycling, but we're working towards it, and Robert's doing a great job as far as getting it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Mark. This has been incredibly informative. And
yes.
Thank you for spending your time coming tonight.
I just, before you leave, I want to say again, probably the 100th time, that I think there would be real benefit to working with the Chamber and the Department of Health on the food waste composting law. And I hear your concern that the work that went into it didn't accurately look at how much food waste, some of the smaller food waste generators are, but there's still plenty of large generators that need education, and a food waste composting expo with the Chamber and the haulers that are participating would be a major step in waste diversion.
And I know you and I have both spoke to the Chamber. Right, and so there has to be willing partners. Up until this point, there hasn't been a willing partner there. But I agree with you, and I think it's a good way to go. We're also running out of time as far as the state, it continues to tick down. So when the state preempts us, so once the state ticks down to cover the same amount we have, they take over for enforcement. It's a couple years away. But the state has already gone from, I think, a ton a week to 3/4 of a ton a week. Eventually, they're coming also down to half a ton. And when they come down to half a ton, ag and markets takes over enforcement, not local. Now, we will still need to enforce schools and hospitals because that's outside of their purview. That's
mm-hmm.
not part of the state law. But it is part of the county law. But I would say we should continue to ratchet down our law.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's one thing that we've talked to the legislature about. And, like, as far as this, I'm not ready to recommend food waste as being a regulated recyclable, but I think it's something that this committee could look at.
It already is. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
Well, it's not a...
It's not a regulated recyclable in the recycling law. Yeah.
It has its own law.
Right.
It doesn't have to be... So it is by definition regulated.
Based on the size of a generator.
But it seems to me that part of the compliance officer's job should be to be working with the larger, you know, the ones that are not questionable about whether it's really half a ton a week or more, but there are many large generators, food waste generators, that are not participating, and they're really good examples. So even if the chamber doesn't sponsor it, that's something that the agency could offer a food waste composting expo, and the chamber could help get the word out. But I think there would be a lot of interest if the focus was on those really good examples like Mohonk and Frost Valley and SUNY New Paltz, et cetera. And that would get some coverage and it would increase participation. And I'll keep seeing if there's somebody at the chamber that'll pay attention.
I just read a story about how the increase of biodiesel and farm machinery is leading to cooking oil being an organized crime situation because it's such a valued commodity. So just things to look at, and I'll send the article to you to share. Yeah.
I want to clarify that the food waste law, that is not enforced by the agency because that law, as written by the legislature, left it to the executive to appoint the enforcing agency. And at that time, it was the Department of the Environment that was appointed. And that is where it's been, and they've mostly done an education on it. They're a small department, smaller than the agency, and so part of us working with the county on the Climate Smart Communities grant was that we would hire a food waste compliance officer, but that's not something we budgeted for. And as you can see, with Robert trying to do flow control and source separated recycling, FWAPRA is not in his purview right now.
But I really liked hearing you say that you think that food waste is something we should look at in the future as regulated, and I think that's something that we will be looking to you on, like when we could try to implement that, because I think that then we would be adding that to the recycling law.
Yeah, I recall it being DOE doing the Department of Environment doing the education along with Department of Health. But I thought the enforcement was going to be with the agency. I'll go back and double check. But I take your word.
I mean, I was in the executive's office at the time. I sat in those meetings where I was not part of the agency, and the agency at the time was saying it should be the Department of Health, and the Department of Health was saying it should be the agency. And
so it ended up being Department of Environment?
It ended up being Department of Environment for, you're right, education. There really hasn't been an enforcement mechanism, but the agency was never appointed, probably because it would have been an unfunded. Yes. Yeah.
Does he seem any more inclined to be involved?
They're always inclined to be involved. They are a very small staff that doesn't have somebody hired as an enforcement officer, and it's never been put in the budget. But the whole point of the Climate Smart Communities grant was that we would have the funding to then hire a compliance officer at the agency.
but we didn't get the grant, so we need to continue to have the conversation. And at a certain time, it's going to stop being county for most of it. It's going to be egg and market.
But also, food waste is something individuals can handle themselves, you know, like Sonali and I, where we live, we handle our own food waste, you know,
home
so
composting, right?
Home composting. And it really makes a difference in your trash. It makes a huge difference. So the more we educate people about that,
you
know.
The compost juice again in the spring, giving them away.
We sell
they're
them.
They're sold, yeah.
We sell them at, like, cost.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't, because it's just all web-driven through the company. There's a couple different ones.
Last year was, like, 50.
I want to say 50 to 80.
They sell
compost. The range.
You know, like, bins.
It's just a rotating
drum. Yeah.
Well, we sell the rotating drum, but... but we also have just like the big black plastic.
That thing.
Which is actually works.
They all work.
That's all it goes aerobic. I mean anaerobic.
Is the anaerobic digestion in a tank or is it?
It's closed and capped.
Pardon?
It's closed and capped. The anaerobic digester will be capped.
Okay, because the one we saw, I think, in Delaware County. Was rows that were rotated.
That's aerated. That's aerated.
What's it?
That's
they do MSW compost.
That's aerobic.
That's not
anaerobic.
Anaerobic has all kinds of odors. And
oh,
stuff,
okay.
So it
that,
has to be
that's
enclosed.
Aerobic because it's being turned
it has air.
Got it.
Windrows.
Yes. Windrows.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else for Mark? I think we've.
Okay.
You have spent a lot of time with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I got to put this back.
Sorry to keep you late.
Oh, you're good. I'm fine.
Okay, so we still have the two vacancies.
So I asked for a definition on what constitutes a recycling coordinator.
Yes.
So
I will, I can try to follow up. And I will follow up again with the Supervisors Association. There might be some misunderstanding. There is an official civil service title that is the recycling coordinator, but also there's just a designation that a town can appoint someone, and it could be anyone. I was the recycling coordinator, which is how I initially got on this committee, is that as a town board member, I was appointed the recycling coordinator.
So we just need a clarification on that.
Yeah.
The Environment Board of the Environment is looking to hire a recycling coordinator to work with the various fairs and festivals.
Yeah.
So really,
that's a good idea.
So I think if a municipal recycling coordinator would be that appointed. But I think a recycling coordinator could mean a lot of things for a lot of organizations. So it would. What this is someone who's been appointed by their municipality.
Okay.
So.
And if Department of Environment hires somebody, is that who you were referring?
Well, they did. Brendan Walsh is
the. They could represent all of the municipalities.
They could. Yeah, we could see if that qualifies.
If what qualifies?
If the person that the Department of Environment appoints in that role could represent all municipalities. So it is
multi-family.
Yeah.
We all need to.
I know. I've asked Mayor Noble about it, but.
I've asked a few people too, but maybe if everyone puts a feeler out.
Set the text.
Yeah. So we have to we want to schedule our next meeting. Mana Jo, did you want to say anything else about that?
No, we've more than covered it.
Okay,
thank you.
Did that cover it?
I just want to be clear that the ask is for support for a collaborative process to get the zero waste plan done.
Yes,
That's the ask. How individuals or the ROC decide to do if anything, but at least to know that that's a concern that sequentially, that should be completed so that all the other activities fall into that and are outlined by time and by cost and where the funding is coming from. Because the plan was very loose. It said, here's a bunch of nice things you can do to divert waste.
Yeah. What about April 1st?
So I was going to ask, I like the idea of meeting every other month or quarterly.
Yeah.
So April 1st, what day of the week is that?
It's a Wednesday.
Okay. It's also the Ulster County Planning Board meeting, and they use this room, I think.
Okay.
So this might not. So let's come up with a couple options
again,
and then they'll tell us if the room's available. We don't have to have the meeting here, but it's very
pretty convenient.
The 8th?
Yeah.
There's another room in the back of
the
library.
Random.
Yeah, the library.
Random.
Okay.
It's big enough for us.
Okay.
So
well,
we can try for the 8th, right? Anybody
or the first?
March 8th?
Is there, what are we looking at?
April
eight.
Or
oh,
March
April,
or April 1st or April
8th?
Is there?
The 8th is preferable.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. 8th is good.
Claudia?
Yeah, the 8th. It's
fine.
Another Wednesday?
Yeah. Okay. All right, so I will make sure that we have the space for it.
And when is it?
April 8th.
But is it 5?
Yeah, 5 works. Does that work for everybody?
That's cool. I just wanted to mention, I had to just ask Mark for clarification. I saw the email, but on the website it still says 6 p.m.
Oh, okay.
Oh, good to know.
Okay, yeah, I noticed actually there was something else that was wrong for that. So I will let Liz know.
Can I go to the town board meeting?
What do you mean?
Can I get
that? Right now?
Run.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Let's motion to adjourn.
Thank you.
Okay.
And I would say look at the Sustainable Hudson Valley report.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because I thought it was thin, and we can add to it.
Manager, I'm going to go let my dog out and walk her around for a bit, so I will meet
you.
You're
going to walk the dog?
Yeah, I'm going to walk the dog.
I'll use the restroom and I'll meet you down
there. I'll meet you
downstairs. So, just to ask again, is there some way that we can help facilitate that collaboration between the legislature and UCCRA?
I can. Well, I'll forward the correspondence received.
Mm-hmm.
There's a toolkit link in there, and you can also forward it to your Climate Smart Committee, Town Board. It was circulated among the Supervisors Association. I'll send the correspondence to my Town Board.
Uh-huh.
So they're, just kind of seeing in, I haven't actually looked at the toolkit yet, but in that. Oh.
Yeah, there's memorializing resolutions, and there's also a letter that people can sign as individuals, and if you want, you can